Professor Buzz Scher talks the legal implications of low and high-tech contact tracing due to COVID-19. This is The Legal Impact, presented by the University of New Hampshire Franklin Pierce School of Law, now accepting applications for JD graduate programs and online professional certificates. Learn more and apply at law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Buzz, contact tracing always gets brought up when epidemics arise. An obvious pre-COVID-19 example was the Ebola outbreak a few years back. There must be some pretty obvious legal concerns when it comes to government-implemented contact tracing.
Yeah, I mean, contact tracing is basically you want to figure out who has had contact with, alert people who have had contact with someone who is infected. In this case, with the COVID-19 virus. And it's a really important public health practice in order to really manage the outbreak in a way that that is effective, particularly when you're trying to reopen the economy, for lack of a better way of putting it. The two things that are really important are testing, as comprehensive a plan of testing as you can engage in, and then contact tracing, knowing when somebody has the virus, who they have had contact with. So it's an important public health measure. That said, there are ways to do it, and there's ways to do it, to use the formal legal expression. A low-tech way to do it, it's already going on in New Hampshire. The public health department is alerting police departments, fire departments, and emergency response people, EMTs, about the names of those people in their communities who've tested positive, so that when the police go, or the fire department or an EMT goes to a address where somebody is known to have tested positive and is there, they're aware of that and can take particularly significant precautions, which makes a lot of sense. The concern is that they're releasing medical information about somebody. Now, HIPAA, the privacy legislation many years ago that deals with medical records, has an exception for this kind of circumstance. So there's not a HIPAA problem. But the concern is if you release the information, if a police officer tells his spouse and his spouse tells a bunch of friends, then you're spreading the medical condition of an individual beyond those who are in need, public health need of knowing it. And that is a privacy concern. In New Hampshire in particular, that would be evaluated under the new Part 1, Article 2B, Information Privacy Constitutional Amendment, where personal and private information, the government is not supposed to intrude on personal and private information.
Who would make that determination whether an outbreak or something of the like reaches that critical mass where it should be bypassing the HIPAA privacy?
That's public health officials in the state make that determination. They're the right people to make that determination. I mean, there's some outbreaks like the flu outbreak. They may take action in the context of a nursing home if the nursing home itself hasn't dealt with spreading that information amongst appropriate people within the nursing home. But more broadly, with a pandemic like this, it's the public health officials in the state. And what they've done with this information is they have everybody to whom they release it sign a document saying those individuals who get the information promise not to reveal it to anyone outside the department or even within the department who doesn't need to know that information. So in cooperation with the Attorney General's Office of Public Health Department and the local police and fire departments, et cetera, has done a good job in that regard. The constitutional privacy concern, that that will, in the long run, if a circumstance develops, will be evaluated when by a judge when somebody files a lawsuit against the police for revealing that information in the wrong kind of context. And then a judge will begin to interpret what does Part 1, Article 2B mean? Basically what it likely means is a judge is a public agency would have to engage in strict scrutiny of whether there are other less intrusive alternatives to revealing the information in the way it was revealed, and did they take sufficient precautionary measures to make sure it wasn't revealed. It appears in the circumstance of what the public health department in New Hampshire is doing, they seem to be doing it the right way, but that's my opinion. So that aspect of contact tracing is being managed reasonably well. It's a relatively low-tech approach to contact tracing. Then there's a second kind of contact tracing for example, is being used in Israel and South Korea, where people who have been diagnosed as positive they're being tracked. Where they go is being tracked via their cell phone data. And the government has got access to that data. It's unclear from what I've read whether the person has opted in to give the government access to that data. It's unclear whether that access to that data is via a private company, a commercial company, like a cell phone provider. Whether the government is obtaining that information from cell phone providers. Where is the cell phone going that A.J. Kierstead has, who we know, hypothetically only, who we know has diagnosed positive? Where is that cell phone going and tracking that? So there's a host of issues there. One, does the person know they're being tracked? Have they chosen to do that? Can the government do that without getting their consent? Do they need a search warrant to do that? What happens to the data in the possession of the government can the government use it for any other purpose? Even assuming they get consent to do it for contact tracing, once they've used it for contact tracing and that process has run its course over the next several months or years, can they hold on to that data? What can they do with that data? What can commercial entities who are providing that data do with that? There's a host of really thorny contractual problems between a commercial entity and the provider of the cell phone to the individual, their relationship, and what is the scope of the contract they signed, and what can the commercial entity do? Does the government need a search warrant to get that information from the commercial entity? Does the commercial entity, or can the commercial entity give it to the government without a search warrant justified by probable cause? It's a really messy area, and the challenge is going to be, as this continues and people challenge it, decisions are going to be made amidst the fear of the pandemic. And historically we've always seen privacy rights fall by the wayside when fear is the dominant cultural ethos at the moment. That happened with 9/11, for example. We took a lot of liberties with our privacy rights in light of the fear of terrorist attacks.
Government agencies have a real hard time with relinquishing that control after years. I mean, how it took Edward Snowden to speak out about the NSA. They were said, "Oh, we're not going to do that anymore." It came to metadata, and that wasn't the case.
Well, use it for this purpose, and it worked. It was really helpful. So we'll just stretch it a little bit and use it for this other purpose. You know, it's kind of like the same thing, and it's what more formally is called mission creep. The original, but one of the early examples of mission creep was the Social Security number. Social Security number had a very, very, very limited purpose when it first came into being. It had to do with your payments you make to the Social Security Administration and, you know, the benefits you could get depending on your physical or mental status or your age. But, I mean, we could talk for hours and not describe the many different ways that that Social Security numbers are now used by private entities and by the government. It's as close to an identification number as we all have, and that's far beyond the scope of what is originally intended. And way back in the 40s, when the Social Security number first came into being, everybody had these privacy concerns. And they said, oh, no, it's just for this limited purpose. And then this concept of mission creep over the next, 75 years took over, really 60, 75 years.
Now, going off of the digital privacy bit that we were just talking about with regards to, say, someone did sign up for government tracking with regards to contact tracing. I mean, we've talked about this briefly when it came to Clearview AI's facial recognition. Is you're not the only person that's necessarily near this mobile device that's receiving the tracking. If I have a family, say I sign up for it to be tracked, but my wife is likely with me for a majority of the time because we're, especially during social isolation, stay-at-home orders and things like that, you're more likely to be with your family. In theory, I'm not the only person being tracked. My family's also getting tracked.
Yep. And that's it can be a shared phenomenon. It's kind of like when you send in your you send in your DNA to Ancestry.com or 23andMe. You're not only sending in your DNA, you're sending in everyone who's a somewhat close relative to you's DNA, since, those we're related to we as human beings are 99.9 similar to each other anyway, genetically, you and I are. But if it's somebody who's related to you, it's 99.9999%, it's a very close relation. So, if I send in my DNA, I'm sending in my brothers and sisters and children's DNA too. So it's the same thing with contact tracing in a different way. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's a rough analogy. And it's the wave of the future, as all of this is. And the broadest concern with high-tech contact tracing is not necessarily the use it's being put to in the moment, particularly when there's consent. It's what are the companies and the government gonna do with all that data? Are they gonna use it to mine? Are they gonna mine it for all sorts of other purposes and build a profile of you and your profile of how you move around? There's a famous U.S. Supreme Court case of 7 or 8 years ago that said if the government puts a tracking GPS on the bottom of your car when it's in public, doesn't enter the car, and follows you around technologically for 10 days, that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, unless they have a search warrant supported by probable cause. Contact tracing is another version of that, if you think about it. So that's going to be the challenge. It's all going to happen in this atmosphere of the fear of the pandemic, the fear of COVID-19, which skews people's judgment, understandably, but nonetheless it skews it.
Thanks for listening to The Legal Impact, presented by UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. To help spread word about the show, please be sure to subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify.